Now, the gig economy appeals to a large market of workers in the UK with benefits, including the freedom to work for yourself and flexible working hours. Yet, latest research from Income Protection Task Force shows that two-thirds of the 10 million people who contribute to the gig economy in Britain have admitted to taking desperate measures to survive between paydays. Joining me now in the studio to talk about the research is personal finance journalist Cara Gamble, together with Tracy Clark, who has her own experiences. Hello to you both.
Hi there.
First of all, Cara, what is the gig economy?
The gig economy, it's a way of working based on people having temporary jobs or doing separate pieces of work, each paid individually, rather than getting a regular income or salary from an employer.
You could have a bit of work one week and not have any the next week.
Yeah, in theory you could, or you could be working regularly and then unfortunately people don't pay you on time. There's lots of reasons you could have an issue with your cash flow.
So who do you have the contract with then if you're in the gig economy?
Well, whoever hires you to do the work, really. So it depends on the type of work that you're doing or the terms of your contract, if you have one. But the problem is that while, you know, the gig economy is great because it offers flexible working, particularly for myself, it was great because it meant I could work around my family. But actually, the people that are self-employed end up being off work more due to poor physical or mental health, which 44% of people are off work for more than 3 months compared to a quarter of those in traditional employment, according to research from the Income Protection Task Force.
And is that due to stress?
I think it's due to a variety of factors. But one thing is if you don't have sick pay, you tend to push yourself to the brink, I think. If you need to work you have no safety net, you might push yourself until, you know, more damage is done. Figures show that 95% of people feel pressured to return to work before they are ready when they're self-employed. And, you know, who can blame us if you aren't making any money when you're trying to recuperate?
And yet, obviously, a lot of people do choose this, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, they do. I've done it myself. And, you know, the benefits are vast. There are some drawbacks. But the great news is that you can take steps to avoid those. You know, for instance, with income protection insurance, you can actually take out cover to insure your salary. So if you were unable to work, you could get paid every month until, you know, potentially up until retirement, which, you know, would mean a massive difference. And it would allow you to focus on your health, but also mean you don't fall into a massive financial ruin, frankly.
Tracy, now, you're visually impaired. Now, that had an impact on your job, didn't it?
It had a massive impact on my job, yeah. I originally had a professional career as a hospital pharmacy technician, and there was no way that I would have been able to continue to do that with a vision impairment, because you need eyesight to read doctors' writing and stuff. absolutely one of those careers that I think with any reasonable adjustments or anything, it just wouldn't be physically possible. And I lost my eyesight, or 98% of my eyesight, through optic nerve atrophy, cause unknown. So I was one of those that thought it will never happen to me, and it did. So I was then advised, very sound advice from the RNIB, thank you guys, that, you know, in the end, it was massive advice, was to quit trying to hold down a job, which was actually causing more stress and more tiredness and more eye strain, and therefore worsening my eyesight. And so the advice line guys on the RNIB advised me to quit and to claim the benefits that I was entitled to, which I really didn't like, and I argued against it for a while. But actually, it was really sound advice and really fantastic. But obviously, it had a massive financial implication for us, because giving up a professional career and salary, and then coming down to the level of the benefits that our state system offers.
So, Cara, there are ways you can give yourself a bit of a safety net if you're in Tracy's position.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the key is to act sooner rather than later, and to, you know, look into an income protection policy, because, you know, it's cheaper than you expect. I mean, you could get cover for, you know, half the cost of a gym membership, frankly, you know. And if you have that in place, you know, it will really pay dividends. And the younger you are when you take out the policy, the healthier you are, so the cheaper the premiums. And, you know, there's ways to, you know, there's help out there to help you find this type of protection. You don't have to go it on your own. You can use an advisor such as Life Search, for instance, which will, you know, you actually speak to someone on the phone and they go through everything that you need and find a type of cover that will, you know, suit your circumstances. So whether you're self-employed or employed or you're married or you have children or what have you, they can help you find something. You don't have to try and figure it all out yourself.
Where can we get some more information?
Yeah, the Income Protection Task Force is a really great place to look for information about this type of cover, and you can find them online at iptf.co.uk.
Cara Gamble and Tracy Clark, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you.